And excuse me, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you are just joining us. We had an interesting conversation in the first hour with Dr. Paul Armstrong on the issue of strep A, what we should be looking out for. If you missed that, you can listen back on the podcast on our website after 12, or you can watch back on YouTube or Facebook as well. Here's one for you. Maybe you might be able to help this listener. It's a toughie. It's not, I mean, it's not a big, you know, it's not the most serious issue in the world, but it's one which comes around every now and again. And the question is simple. Greg, can you ask listeners what amount of money is now given as a gift when attending a wedding? So how much do you put in a card if you're attending a wedding? Now, maybe there's different figures. Is there, if you're going on your own, or if you're going with a partner? But let's presume you're invited to everything, okay? So the mass, the reception, the afters, all of it, right? So what would you put in the card if you were going on your own? What would you put in the card if you were going with someone else? What is the standard? Is it 150, 200? Is it one? I don't know. What do you think? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. That listener obviously heading to a wedding and wants to know, how much do you put in the card? Another caller says, hi, Greg, just heard this morning, no more wearing of masks anymore in the hospitals. It's about bloody time. Greg, they were the biggest joke ever. Came in and it was the same with the COVID restrictions, but the silly Irish believed everything and our government is laughing at us. That's what that caller believes. Now, I should point out, by the way, I don't know, because we can't get confirmation what the policy is at Letterkenny University Hospital. That's the guidance nationally, and I understand that each hospital can make their own decision whether or not to keep masks. Now, whether they can enforce it or not, I don't know. Some people will be very happy if they do keep them to comply. Others will not comply. So we don't know at this time what the plan is at Letterkenny University Hospital, our local hospital for this region here. But nationally, there is the mandate, but I believe there is still discretion within each individual hospital. We'll get clarity on that for you. I'm sure many of you listening will have to visit the hospital in the not too distant future. A government surplus of $8 billion for 2022, yet we all continue to pay a universal social charge, a charge which was supposed to be a short-term measure to get us out of recession. Yet here we are, years later, still paying it. $16 billion next year. So I'm so shocked I can't get the words out of my mouth. It's sick. It's $10 billion this year. You're out there by... It was $8 billion for 2022. That's correct, yes. It's going to be $10 billion for 23 and $16 billion for 24. So 8 and 10 is 18, 28, $34 billion surplus over 3 years. You know, again, how could we... We can't have a situation, can we, where anyone in this country is struggling for housing, for healthcare, for mental health care, for supports, for home helps, for carers. You know, we need to be spending more targeted money, not throwing money at things, because that's one of the big mistakes we make. But surely, if we have a surplus in excess of $30 billion over 3 years, this country should just be the dream country. It should be the envy of the world in terms of a place to live. A caller says the government could look at spending some of that money on schools. My son recently got tested for dyslexia. It cost us €500. We both work, but only getting by on what we earn. Absolutely no help. This country is a disgrace. I think maybe you might not, this helps at all, but you might be able to get some of that back through a tax rebate, I hope. But that's not the point of your text. How can this country be awash with money when we're still borrowing and our national debt is way over €200 billion? €44,000 per skull in this country it is. But listen, the national debt's the national debt. How much are we ever going to try and write that down? Will we ever look at the national debt of the United States of America? It is unbelievable. Trillions and trillions. And they're literally printing money, hence the high inflation, which might not come down as quickly as it might elsewhere. That, I mean, are we ever going to write down that national debt? I don't know. It's just going to sit there. We're paying some of it off. We're going to be paying interest in it. I would prefer to see this money now spent on what we can fix now, but each to their own. A caller says, I'd love to see the money being spent supporting nurses, Gardaí, and 100% scheme. Is there a survey on this? The survey's at the next election. The survey's when they come knocking at your doors, whoever it is, from whatever party, be it an established party, an incumbent, a new rural party, it doesn't make any difference. That's really, I suppose, where the survey is. But it'd be an interesting question, perhaps something we can throw up on our socials. I'd like to see all social welfare payments in vouchers so the kids would get it. Yeah, I understand the point you're trying to make there. And I don't think we should maybe confuse the actions of a few with what's happening right across the board. Back to responsible dog ownership or the lack thereof. A caller says dog owners should be more responsible for their own dogs, especially at lambing time. Just open the door and let the dogs out, especially pet dogs, should they not hurt anyone. Nobody ever claims responsibility. Sheep get very nervous with strangers about, but dogs, they are terrified. Gather up and away from danger. Mary's sheep will take a very long time, if ever, to get over that trauma. And we heard from Willie there in the first hour via email. He had a sheep kill and they never got over it. A caller says, I had my smart meter installed. I originally wasn't going to, but did. I received a bill. I see no difference. It's the same as last year. Yeah, that's kind of the reports I'm getting. There are signs up and round about saying resist them because people think that, and I'm not saying it wouldn't be the case, that they could charge whatever they like and they could switch you off remotely and so on and so forth. Last Sunday, my wife and I went on our typical Sunday stroll to the port in Inver, which is beautiful, when we were approached by a pit bull and collie dog barking aggressively at us. Thankfully, they eventually left us, but we found their owners to be swimming in the sea without a care in the world, with no lead or care for their dogs or other people on the beach. I was left stunned. We left early to avoid any confrontation. So the owners of the dogs went for a lovely dip, left their dogs on the beach, apparently untethered, and they were barking aggressively at these people. And the owners seemingly swimming without a care in the world, like a scene from the beach movie, I'd imagine. But those people felt they had to leave early, which is not the way it should be, is it? We had also a contact from a listener who's... they were okayed for the Susie grant, okay? So their finances are such that they qualified for the Susie grant. They couldn't afford to send their young person to college down south because of accommodation charges, so their student went to Northern Ireland. And then they learned that the Susie grant won't cover their child's expenses there, the young person's college fees and what have you. In other words, they're not entitled to the grant whilst they're studying in Northern Ireland. Lots of you text in with various solutions, and I appreciate it. But just to get to some more of the comments coming in on that. A caller says student loan fees are not means tested. Student loans for fees. Okay, I get you. Because one of the suggestions were there are companies that will lend you the money and then you can pay it back when you start working. That's not for everyone, though, but we appreciate the answer because I posed that question. Regarding Northern Ireland colleges, when we get the €1,000 deduction on fees in the south, last year it was not honoured in the north. Northern Ireland fees are more expensive too. And I can't remember who I asked questions about this of. I think it might have been a government minister, the ones that still speak to me. But I'm not really quite sure. Their commitment was is that they knew it was happening and they were looking into it, I believe, was their response. A caller says, I had to get back surgery, so due to the weight here, I decided to seek the cross-border initiative, and I was granted this. I was told it would be £175, is that right? However, when I had an appointment with the anaesthetist, they told me, due to my heart condition and the lack of facilities, example, no ambulance, to go to Alton na Gelvin or even facilities in Belfast, I wouldn't be eligible for the surgery. They seem to cherry-pick the fittest people for this and don't cater for those with underlying conditions. Now, I think there must be a digit missing from the... it's not £175, unless that was to go and see a consultant. Why is there opening owners at on Grinia of Alia? It was open for thousands of years, and it is a national disgrace that the OPW is taking it on. The OPW should be asked to categorise the number of instances of antisocial behaviour that occurred at An Grinion. There's no electric power at the gates of An Grinion of Alia, so automatic gates are not an option. But as I say, we said in the programme yesterday when that was raised first, that is not a problem that could not be overcome. Greg, I want to support Councillor Paul Canning, who was on your show yesterday, in his plea to keep the entrance to An Grinion Fort opened in the summer until 9 p.m. There were lots of people at the fort on Sunday. Ask a local person to lock the entrance at 9 p.m. That comes in from Kathleen Grant. Thank you. Another caller says, in a show in the Forgotten Jewel, as far as Tourism Ireland is concerned, how do other heritage sites deal with insurance? That's just an excuse. In fairness to Tourism Ireland, it is the OPW that is setting the rules here. A caller says, you have to ring up and cancel your smart meter. That's what I'd done, and I had no bother. Check your... I'm going to check the cabinet, see what's in there. Why has the blood bank stopped going to Gwydor, Dunloe? They are missing out on a lot of donations there. I'm not sure. I think they might be going there. We'll try and find out. They were in Donegal Town not so long ago. Then they're in Ishoan. I know they go to Ballybofey Stranoller, and I know they go to Gwydor. I'm not sure. Have they stopped it? When was the last time they were there? We can check it out for you. Can the hospital not prove that you were... This is in terms of getting treatment in the north. Can the hospital not prove that you were there for appointments or operation? I was told about coffee receipts. I thought, how sad we have to go down that line. The logical solution to that is that the hospital is the proof. A letter from the hospital saying that you were there. This notion of having to buy something in the locality or on the hospital grounds is ridiculous, really. It's embarrassing, but it seems to be the case. Back to smart meters. Greg, just in relation to the smart meter and the notice, I had a notice up on my meter stating I did not want a smart meter, and I still have people knocking on my door insisting. I was on a list to get my meter replaced by the ESB, so I took action and rang them myself, and I am now taken off the list. Just to save your caller the hassle, it is best to ring. Now, I think you've, and it's only a turn of phrase, kept the wolves from the door, or perhaps maybe kicked the can down the road. The reality is that very soon there'll be far more smart meters than they are the old analog meters, and it will come to a point very soon that you will either go for a smart meter or lose your service. At the moment, they're doing it on an opt-out sort of a situation. They're going to install it unless you say no. But trust me, that's not going to last very much longer, because the direction of traffic is to move to smart meters. And once the majority have them, and if we're not there already, we soon will be, you will be given a date in the future whereby you will have to accept a smart meter or lose service. Mark my words, it's coming. Greg, I'm in my 70s, and due to my age, I haven't a notion about technology. My own fault, I know. It's not. It's fine. There's people much younger than you that haven't a notion about technology, so please don't worry about that. But they go on to say that the smart meter went away over my head. I rang the ESB, got no answer, so then wrote to them explaining this, and could they maybe even give me a call to explain the concept of a smart meter. Instead, I got a leaflet with no written explanation addressing my concerns. When someone came to the door to install this, they themselves couldn't explain it either. I have no issue installing one. Should someone explain it to me? Well, we did have someone on explaining it. And look, the whole idea is that, although it's not in place yet, that you have the smart meter attached to your house. You have a little unit inside the house, and it tells you when you're using your electricity, helps you track your electricity. This is the argument. But then I went through the rates. And it seems more expensive to have a smart meter if you switch to a smart rate. It seems a disadvantage, you know what I mean? Plus the fact I don't really want to put on a washing machine, a dishwasher, a tumble dryer at nighttime, because I wouldn't think it very safe. So for my brief analysis of it, having a smart, you have the regular rate, the smart rate, you know what I mean? Where it's advantageous to use electricity at certain times. It did seem more expensive. The unit rate in general, busy times, was more expensive than the standard tariff that you might be on, if that makes sense. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, I think everyone is aware. There's a lot of negativity out there, isn't there? Or at least it feels things are very negative every which way you turn. And listen, hands up. If you have a current affairs show, as much as we try and bring light to the shade, often a lot of negative things are platformed on this show. It can feel overwhelming at times. I'm sure we've all felt that at some time or other. But perhaps maybe we can view things in a different light. Maybe Declan Coyle, founder of the Green Platform, might be able to help us. Good morning to you, Declan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. It's a privilege and an honour.
It's great to have you with us. Thank you. So what is the Green Platform, Declan?
The Green Platform is it's a book at the moment, but it's a concept that I came up with, Greg, was that I say go back to the beginnings of it when I was doing my postgraduate studies in Ottawa. I met a great man there a man called Viktor Frankl. He was an Austrian psychiatrist who was tortured in Auschwitz during the Second World War. And he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. But he said in Auschwitz, he discovered the last and the greatest of the human freedoms. And that's our freedom to choose a response in any given set of circumstances. Now, that ability to choose, Greg, that was mind-blowing for me because I grew up in a farm in County Cavan. We had horses, cattle, sheep and pigs and all of that. But we also had handed down scripts from the 12th century, 14th century, 16th century. And I remember I was 22 at the time and I just said, oh, he made me very angry. And Viktor said, no, Declan, he did not make you angry. You are making a choice to be angry. And I still didn't get it. I said, no, Viktor, it's not me. It's him. It's his fault. He's the one. No, he said, you are making a choice. And I still remember the feeling in my stomach, 22 years old, to discover that I had a choice. And I say things like, oh, that one, she really annoys me, you know? And he said, no, Declan, she is not annoying you. You are making a choice to be annoyed. It is a bad choice you are making.
Was that a light bulb moment for you?
That was the light bulb. And then what, because I'm a very visual person myself, and I wanted to bring this power to choose and give it a visual effect. So it was one day at lights, I saw reds for no, green for go. So subliminally, I said, okay, something happens in your life. You feel it, you honor it, you're emotionally honest. If it's tragedy, you cry the tears. If it's loneliness, you turn on the tap. If it's love, you love fully. But you honor your human experience. You don't pour pink positive paint over human suffering. That's denial. But you feel it, you honor it. And then we have a white space. And in that white space, we have Frankl's The Last and the Greatest of the Human Freedoms. Mm. And I can choose a red platform, which is the victim, the whinge, the whine, the moan, the complain, the poor me. And Greg, that's the home of the energy vampires. And you know these energy vampires, it's not their bad breath or their body odor, but my God, they're whinging, they're whining, they're moaning, they're complaining, and they suck the energy out of you like a vacuum cleaner. Or I can go back to my white space and I can choose the green platform. I can choose with the 10 most powerful words in the English language. If it is to be, it is up to me. I choose peace. I choose joy. I choose to be happy.
But Declan, just Viktor, before we dig a little bit deeper into that, though, I think to some extent, we, even if we had resilience, everything around us is almost chipping that resilience away. I think we have generations coming through that resilience isn't really taught at all, actually. Everything is just the path of least resistance in life. And that doesn't help us, because then when things start getting very real, you know, we don't have the equipment to deal with it. So my point of saying that to you is that many of us will approach the lights. You see green and red and you can make your choices, right? But I think there's a stage that has to be gotten through before you can differentiate between the color of those lights, if that makes sense, in that it's like wishing to run a marathon, but you can't get off the couch to make that first step. For some, they can just jump off the couch, do the 5K and work on from there. So what do we need to be doing in ourselves to actually be able to have the clarity of thought to see the green and red lanes?
You know, I would say, Greg, that it all comes down to awareness. And, you know, if I am awake and aware and alert, then I can see that this is a bad choice, this is a good choice. But the problem, like you've outlined there, is like me in Ottawa, was that I was unconscious, I was asleep. I didn't know I had a choice. And it was... You know, and it was the conditioning brought up in that, and resilience. We got a great talk in the States last June from a man called Eric Wehenmeyer. He's a blind man who climbed Everest. And he said to us, he said, what if adversity wasn't your enemy? What if adversity was your pathway to true greatness? And that was an insight that we all hit adversity. And it's almost automatically we go on the red platform and we whinge, we whine. But if we saw this, because in life, Greg, it's not the moment in front of me that's bothering me. It's I'm bothering myself about the moment in front of me. It's not the weather that's bothering me. I'm bothering myself about the weather. And if I could get, and I remember Victor said to me, he was frustrated with me because I couldn't get it. And he said, Declan, why not you get it? Why not you get it? I said, Victor, I'll tell you why not I get it. It's because of my mother. Your mother, he says, you're like the American. You blame your mother, he says. I said, yeah, because there were six of us in our family. If it was a rainy day, we'd be in the room, we'd be messing, we'd be playing football and everything. And my mother would come in and say, stop that, carry on now, you're making me very angry.
Mm,
okay. Now, it never occurred to me, Greg, to say, Mammy, that's a very poor decision you're making now, because there'd be the tactile response. So we're conditioned in that way. But once we get awareness, then everything changes.
Okay, so can I give you probably a real life scenario, so I can so our listeners can help understand how you might apply this, and we'll go through it a little bit more, right? So you're living day to day, okay? Things are very very tight. You get paid on a Friday, or you get money on a Friday. Your money runs on a Wednesday, and you're driving along and your engine goes. You're on the side of the road. You've got no money to fix that engine. Things are as bad as they could possibly be. And now they're compounded because you've got two children in the back. You don't know how you're going to get them to football, which you've probably stopped going at to facilitate them going to football. So is there a way, I mean, can you employ a system that makes you react in a positive way to that, if you know what I mean? So how do you apply this theory or this practice in that type of a situation, and what would be the outcome of it?
Well, there's three steps, Greg, we bring in the Green Platform. The formula I use is acceptance. That's the first step. Because we create and manufacture most of our suffering through our resistance and non-acceptance of life as it is. Like I had a man from Kerry phone me last week, and I said, well, how are things going? You just moved to Kerry. Oh, he says, I didn't have the week I wanted. No, I said, but you had the week you got. So it's that non-acceptance. So we bring acceptance to it. Now, acceptance, Greg, on its own can degenerate into indifference or apathy. So we must add then plus positive action now. Pan is an easy way to remember, plus positive action now. And of the 25 things, what one positive thing can I do? Because, Greg, it is as it is. I cannot un-is it. The situation is as it is. Whatever chance I have of changing it, of bringing a positive attitude to it, I have none at all if I scream and shout and bang the car and kick it.
So is it to say that so it helps you deal with the situation and makes it more tolerable, perhaps? But obviously there's realities that it's not going to fix. It's going to make the experience more tolerable, and maybe you can see a solution better if you're in a better frame of mind. I'm not putting words in your mouth. You're the expert in this regard. But clearly it's not going to magic the engine to work again. But it helps us to deal with it and find a solution. Is that's the way it works then?
Yeah, that if we're in this calm, centered space inside, I have a much better chance of coming up with a better choice to make it. And then what happens, Greg, is once we take that first step, the whole universe conspires with us to make it happen. That's the third step. I'll give an example. We have a special needs child here, Alexander. He's 18. He has Maud Wilson syndrome. He's on 35 medications a day. He has scoliosis. He's tube fed and he's doubly incontinent and all of that. Okay. Now, 3 years ago or so, the government and the HSE took away his medical card, and a terribly cruel medical card called of all the terminally ill children in the country. So I brought the formula to that. Acceptance. The card is gone. It is as it is. Now, I can sit on my hands and whine and whinge and moan and play the victim. Or else I can plus positive action now. What one positive thing can I do to change the situation? So I was doing some emails and I wasn't too good at Facebook at the time, but I put up a picture of Alexandra and the story on Facebook. And that night, got a call from a journalist. We had a two-page spread in the newspaper the next day. But we started a campaign 42 days. At the end of the campaign, Minister of Health had to resign, Minister of Education had to go, the head of the Labour Party went, and all the terminally ill children got their medical cards back. But it all started from acceptance, it is as it is, the card is gone, plus PAN, plus what positive action do. And then the whole universe conspired with us to get the cards back, because we got interviews, we got Saturday Night Show with Brendan O'Connor, we got, we had 17 newspaper articles, 16 radio interviews and 6 television interviews. But that all came from those first steps. If I had sat on my hands, played the victim, blamed the government, I'd be whinging, whining, moaning forever. And the beauty of the Green Platform is that it was born in Auschwitz. It was Viktor Frankl, where he said they killed 39 members of my family, but every day he said, I made a choice to be happy. Because first thing in the morning, he said, that I made a choice to be happy. Now, they could break my body. They could torture me. They could do operations on my genitals, he said, but they couldn't touch my spirit. And that choice I made every day. And if my car is broken down on the side of the road, I can whinge and whine and moan and kick the car, or I can choose inner peace.
Do you believe everybody has that ability? Step. Sorry, I beg your pardon, Declan. Do you believe everybody has that ability within them, though?
Absolutely, 100%. I had a lady who was, she's in her 70s. She was in, a few weeks ago, she was in a terrible way, and she had tried all kinds of psychology and psychiatry and all the rest, but she was miserable. And she said, can I get the Green Platform? So I signed the copy and gave it to her. 3 weeks later, Greg, she sent me a little handwritten wobbly note. Thank you for the Green Platform. I am now living a life I never dreamed possible. Now, if she can do it, Greg, any of us can do it, because we go to stories. If you go on the Red Platform, you see, an event has no meaning. A situation has no meaning. A fact has no meaning, unless I make up a story in my head about it. So I'm the interpreter, the meaning maker, the storyteller. So my question to people is why? Why, when something happens, do you make up a story on the Red Platform that makes you feel bad, like this is a disaster, with a septic tank of sabotage underneath that platform, when you can make up a story like on the Green Platform, like this is a great opportunity. Mm.
So you're not anger, frustration, they're not necessarily negative emotions, though, because obviously you'd be very angry, you'd be very upset, you'd be very frustrated about the case that you talked of, but you focus that to campaign. So you're not saying that you have to be happy about everything. I mean, I presume negative emotions are okay. We can't fight those. It's what you do with them. As I say, I don't want to paraphrase it, but I'm just trying to make sure we all better understand. Is that what you're saying? I'm sure you feel angry and frustrated and what have you at times, Declan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you see, that's why I go back to the beginning, that this is not about repression. It's about you have a feeling, you feel it. Well, I would imagine, Greg, I talked to Mother Teresa one time. When she saw the people dying on the sides of the street in Calcutta, she got very angry. But then she channeled the anger into building the house for the dying. So anger is, and I wouldn't, you feel angry. Like, I remember in a former life, I was a club and missionary priest out in the Philippines. And in a slum there, I remember the last 90 days, I checked the funeral book. I buried 65 children under 2 years old, all who died from hunger-related diseases. And I had a debrief from a Jesuit, Dennis Murphy from New York. And he I'd done all sorts of projects like Grameen Banks, cooperatives, credit unions, and, hen projects, pig projects, fishing projects, all of that. And he praised me to the heights. But then he said, after these 5 years, are you a happier, more creative, more vital, more innovative person? Or are you more angry and bitter and resentful? And I attacked him, Greg. I said, Dennis, did you hear a single thing I told you? I just told you I buried 65 children who died from hunger in a world full of food. Of course, I'm more angry and bitter and resentful. What do you expect? Happy, clappy, all is well. Well, I have news for you, Dennis. All is not well, and I am not happy. And he paused for a minute. And this is the other beginnings of the Green Platform. He said, Declan, if you're coming back to this slum, bring the people joy or bring them nothing. Because the last thing they need is another serious, long-faced, miserable, cranky missionary priest working for justice and peace. The end must be prefigured in the means. You must live the utopia you're talking about. If I want inner a Mercedes-Benz from you, you cannot give it to me because you haven't got it. If I want inner peace from you, you cannot give it to me because you haven't got it. And he said, you still don't get the Gandhi thing. And I said, what is the Gandhi thing? Be the change you want to see in the world. And he said, how many years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of justice, of food in Latin America, in Asia, in Africa must you get before you can decide to be happy? Are you going to be? So that put the kibosh on my anger, Greg.
Okay. You are making a presentation or presenting a motivational talk, and people have got a good sample of that now, I think, on the show this morning. It's at St. Cronus Church, Dunloe. It's tonight, actually, at 7 p.m. and it's open to everyone, is it, Declan?
That's right, open to everyone. And Father Johnny Moore has organised it there. And we have Michael Maloney, the great Donegal singer, is opening it. And he has a beautiful song that he has written about people who are facing challenges in their lives and about, to sum it up, Michael would sing about the purpose of life is to live a life of purpose. And that's Michael's message. So he's opening it and he's closing it. And he's an incredible singer. So I am honoured to have a man like that bookending the presentation, Greg.
OK, and it's at St. Cronus Church, Dunloe, tonight at 7 p.m. And you'll be able to hear more from Declan and the Green Platform and how it might be able to benefit you. Thank you for your time this morning. It's been nice listening to you.
Thank you, Greg. My privilege again.
Take care. Goodbye. Have a lovely day. Okay. As I say, that might not resonate with everyone, but it may resonate with some. And if you're interested in that, as I say, St. Cronus Church, Dunloe, starts at 7 p.m. Declan is a renowned speaker, by the way, and he's going to concentrate on resilience to life's pressures, giving us hope and help in seeking a positive way through life's problems. All is welcome. And Michael Malone, as you heard there, bookending. And by the way, bring a cushion with you if you want to sit on, because it's pews and you might want to be comfortable. So bring a cushion. Right, the Road Traffic and Roads Bill 21 set to go before the Cabinet before being signed into law in the coming weeks, paving the way for the use of shared electric scooter schemes in Irish towns and cities, while also setting rules for private electric scooter use. A lot of people, perhaps even the Gardaí and other road users, waiting for this with bated breath. Aisling Dunn is head of public policy in Ireland with Bolt and joins us now. Hi, Aisling.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Right, so what can we look forward to into the future post this legislation being enacted?
Well, the expectation is that within a couple of months of the legislation being enacted, the regulations will be released by the department. So the minister will sign them into law, and these regulations will give much more detail and be more specific about what you can and cannot do on a scooter and what type of scooters you can use, and will really clear up a lot of this ambiguity and kind of uncertainty that surrounds the use of scooters at the moment.
And what's Bolt's role in all of this?
Well, I suppose as an operator across most of Europe, we provide e-bikes and e-scooters along with a range of other shared transport modes. And we would like to start providing those e-scooters in towns and cities in Ireland. At the moment, we provide e-bikes in Sligo and Kilkenny, and we will also be providing them in Bray and Wexford in the coming weeks. So these are kind of shared bikes that you can use for 10, 15 minutes to connect you from one part of the town or city to the other, maybe connect you into your transport link so that you can then get a bus or train. So we'd like to be able to do that on a more widespread basis and to also be able to provide scooters.
The thing with the scooters is, and I'm not being negative, right? I'm quite an early adopter of things, but I was in Brussels recently and what I witnessed was not an awful lot of people on scooters, right? But scooters abandoned everywhere. And I'm not one to sort of exaggerate. I'm on about, there were places for scooters to go, but they were literally just abandoned on their sides across footpaths and all that type of stuff. I'm not sure if Bolt's involved in that or responsible for that. But, I presume that's not how they're ordinarily used. Is Brussels an outlier in that regard? Because it was chaos.
Absolutely. And I think that's totally a fair observation. I've noticed it myself. So it depends on cities. So some cities have very strict rules about how the scooters can be parked and some don't. And where there aren't strict rules, people tend to go literally to the door of the place they want to go to and then just abandon it right on the path outside. It's pretty inconsiderate, but I guess if there are no guidelines or rules in a city, people tend to, you know, take the easiest option. What I think will happen in Ireland, and certainly what we'll be proposing, is that we have virtual parking bays for e-scooters in the same way that we do for e-bikes in Sligo. You might be familiar with it. And we have 51 locations across Sligo town where you have to be to start and finish your journey. And geofencing controls it. You're not allowed to finish your journey. You can't stop paying for it unless you drop it into one of those 51 locations. And so by doing that, we're dictating to a certain extent, and we're removing a tiny bit of the convenience because you can't bring it straight to your front door. But what we're doing is ensuring that people can't just abandon e-bikes or e-scooters on the footpaths. We don't have the kind of footpaths that maybe they do in some other European cities that are, you know, 5 meters wide, and maybe a scooter left lying on its side isn't going to hold people up. In Ireland, the size of our footpaths mean that that will create a hazard for other road users, for pedestrians, people in wheelchairs, buggies. It's just something that we are...
So it's an outlier, I get you. And that makes sense, as you say, and you recognise it might be slightly less convenient, but people are adaptable. Do we have the infrastructure for scooters and bikes? I mean, Sligo town kind of lends itself reasonably well, I think, to that. I'm not sure how might Letterkenny or other towns around the region. So... Could you hit the ground running, or scootering for that matter? Like, do you believe that our towns, do they require a specific infrastructure? Not the one that you might put in place. I'm on about the way the roads are laid out, cycle lanes, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a body of work to be done in general to get Ireland to, you know, a higher standard and probably, you know, on a par with some of our European neighbours in terms of cycle lanes and cycle infrastructure, and even, you know, how they're dealt with the traffic lights, you know, rights of way. There is definitely more work to be done, but we are on a good path. There has been a lot of investment in this area. The government is committed to it, and we're seeing improvements, you know, kind of on a monthly basis. So would we like to see more of it? Would it make the service even more enjoyable for users, more likely to get more people out of their private cars and onto scooters and bikes? Yes. And is it sufficient as it is at present to get going? Yes. But it's certainly something that we'd like to see more of. And there is an element of chicken and egg, because the more people who use kind of these shared modes or light electric modes like e-scooters, e-bikes, the more likely it is that councils and national government will invest in infrastructure to support it. But then also sometimes
chicken and egg, I get you. Yeah.
You can't launch it until you have better bike lanes.
And I presume Bolt has submitted something to the government in this regard. So what do you see is the right way moving forward? Would you favour it controlled to operators like yourselves, do you know, or broadened out? So, because we have to figure out, right, if people are on the road, who's liable, who's covering, what's the story with insurance? You might argue that you can sort all that out, but you could end up with 100 people up and down the streets of Letterkenny and Sligo on scooters. So what do you think? How do you think this plays out, or what would you like to see for that matter?
I think how it plays out is that both private scooter use and kind of public shared scooter schemes will be allowed under the new regulations. And I think that's right, because there are an awful lot of people who have their own private scooters. However, I do think there is a benefit to the shared schemes, because as you mentioned, there's insurance, there are safety measures that we can put in place that can't be put in place for a privately owned scooter. So I think an emphasis should be on the shared schemes, because they both have a greater level of control in terms of age restrictions, insurance, and, you know, putting in features such as testing at night, cognitive reaction testing. So between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m., we make sure that if anyone's going to use our bikes or our scooters, they pass the test on the app to show that they haven't been drinking alcohol, just that they're mentally able for it. So there are a lot of things that the shared schemes can control to make it a safe, reliable, sustainable service. So I'd like to see an emphasis on that. Mm. I don't think for the big cities, you would want to see only one operator. I think you'd want to see two, three, maybe four operators so that there's good competition. For the smaller kind of towns, regional towns, it might be better for it only to be one operator.
And do you think we will see these in the small regional towns, I wonder? Because, I mean, obviously you go to Galway, Cork, Dublin and you know, you go into Sligo because, you know, you want to say you're in the Northwest as well, right? do you actually see this being, do you think the Letterkennys and Buncrannas and similar sized towns, these are like 5,000 population towns, 15,000 population towns, and Letterkenny's much more than that, of course. Do you see scooters or shared scooter schemes being a norm in sites of that size?
It is definitely the million-dollar question. It's something that we grapple with internally. Obviously, these things, you know, can't run at a loss. And if you're a very small town, it's hard for a company to justify rolling out a scheme.
Did someone say subsidies?
Well, now that you mentioned, well, no, I suppose that is one of the issues. And okay. It's something that we won't know until these schemes get live. How popular will they be? Will they be able to wash their face? Will it be something that if the government
and presumably
wants to
do, you need a certain level of a residential population, don't you? Because you're not going to pick up a scooter, presumably a kilometre or 2 kilometres out of town and scoot into town. So you need to have a certain level of internal traffic, no?
You do need to have a certain level of internal traffic, but actually that description that you just gave is sort of like a park and ride. And it's something that we are doing in Sligo with the e-bike. So having a park and ride on the outskirts of town and then having the e-bike station there, the whole way in. So like there, you know, there's issues with congestion. There's issues with having to pay for parking all day. And so that idea of the park and ride is something that does work for a lot of towns and cities as well.
We've a lot of TBCs here. I presume organisations like your own are looking for a plan here, a time frame, some clarity, even just simply for planning purposes. And as you quite rightly, it's not just yourselves. There are other players in the game, I'm sure. Is that really why you're doing this sort of random media talk to try and ensure that the government, you know, gives us something to work with here?
Yeah, I mean, we're engaging with the Department of Transport and the Road Safety Authority and the NTA, you know, regularly trying to understand what's coming, how we can plan for it. I suppose there seems sometimes in the media a lot of confusion. Sometimes people say scooters are legal. It passed legislation that hasn't happened yet, but it is coming. You know, people kind of maybe don't understand what the kind of process is. So that's really why we're engaging with the media this week, is just to try and raise awareness about the process. And also, as you say, start planning and start encouraging councils and cities and people who live in these areas to think about what they'd like to see and start engaging on it. Because once the legislation is here, what we'd really like to see is then movement. If these schemes are going to be rolled out, that it's done relatively speedily. Ultimately, I would say that we won't see them in our towns and cities this year. It will be early next year before these kind of schemes have been rolled out. But we, you know, we'd like to see some momentum once we finally have the legislation to do it.
Right. OK. What's the average cost of a ride on one of these across your sort of networks?
So at the moment in Ireland on our e-bikes, and we expect our scooters to be similar, but obviously, you know, things could change over the 6 to 12 months. But at the moment, it's 18 cent per minute and we've no unlock fee. So if you're on it for 10 minutes, which our average journey is between 10 and 12 minutes and looking at about 180. There are day passes. And
yeah, I get you. Yeah, but that's just the basic. OK,
the basic.
It's interesting. It's going to be I'm really fascinated to see how all this unfolds. And I hope we have the capability to do something like this. I sometimes wonder, do we? That we'll all just get caught up in why it can't work rather than focusing on why possibly it can. But anyway, that's not for me to decide. It's been lovely chatting to you, Aisling. Thanks very much. I know we were supposed to get to you a little bit earlier, but things ran over. I appreciate your patience, OK?
That's right. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, look, nice to talk to you too. That's Aisling Dunn, Head of Public Policy in Ireland with Bolt, B-O-L-T. there's a few things that the likelihoods that might come from new legislation. Actually, you know what? Because we've talked about it in the past, after the news at 11, I might run through some of those in terms of, you know, what, who might need insurance, who's likely, what age, all that kind of stuff. I'll do that actually after the news.